love Marvel.
Comic Conversations.
It's awesome.
With your host,
the wickedly talented
Tony.
You egg sucking dog.
And Alex.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. This is Tony, and you're listening to episode 184 of Comic Conversations, the podcast that reviews more comics than anybody else, where we talk all things comics for the week of March 8th, 2017. And as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Alex. Alex, how are you doing today?
Lauren punched me for singing that.
Okay, for those of you who don't know the backstory and why I picked that for Alex's drop. So on Saturday night, I'm in Las Vegas, Nevada at the Ring of Honor TV taping. And I get a message, a Facebook message from your wife. And what does she say? Now obviously you presumably think, you know, Alex isn't getting the job done. She wants to hit up Tony. You know, it makes sense. But she says, Alex will not shut up with this stupid song about hobbits. It's like, it's driving me crazy and I need to talk to somebody about it.
Oh.
So as soon as I heard that, I'm like, because Alex originally gave me another idea for a drop, and I was like, that's great and all, but I think he'd get a lot more pleasure out of me picking that song that he just driving his wife crazy about.
It was funny, too, because when you played that, I was outside, and I started dancing. I couldn't help it. At work, people would come back to talk to me, and I'd be like, well, what are you doing? Are you? And then I had it queued up to play. Taking the hubs to Isengard, Isengard. And everybody, like, all my employees are, like, either really young or really old. So none of them knew what this was.
I will say this. You showed this to me, I think, earlier last week. And I told you, late slip, this has been like, a meme for, like, the last 2 or 3 weeks now. So I'm like, yeah. Okay, big whoop, big whatever. I'm like, I've seen the meme. I've heard the song. It's funny. I'll give you that.
Love it. Love it.
But I am not impressed with your performance. All right. I feel like we killed enough time. Let's go into our first segment this week, comic book news. Alex, where have I heard this song before? In the environment of pro wrestling, I think I've heard this song before.
I don't know. It's an old Tears for Fear song.
Ooh, I know where I heard it now. This may ruin the song for you. You may never listen to it again. The I guess it would be the owner and presumably top babyface of Chikara Pro Wrestling.
Oh, really? Quackenbush?
Yeah, Mr. Wrestling is Performance Art, Mike Quackenbush.
I didn't know this is, I like the song. Tears for Fears has a funny, cause my favorite band is Radiohead. And when they, I guess when Creep was their first single, they were, an opening act for Tears for Fears, who were a big band at the time. And I guess, the lead singer did not like Radiohead. So he mockingly covered Creep at one point. And they were upset. Of course, years later, they would all come to hate that song.
But I'm like, I've heard this song before in a wrestling capacity. I can't remember when and where it was, but now I remember. I think it was Mike Quackenbush's walkout theme. Well, there you go.
It's pretty awesome. It's hilarious. I used to put it up on Facebook every year. The first time I did it, it was with a question, something to the effect of if you are incredibly pretentious, but you're aware that you're being pretentious, are you still pretentious? Because that song is the most pretentious song ever written.
A little bit. And actually,
if you do like Dream Theater or something, someone who's actively trying, they are more so, but these guys were, like, they had no idea. They thought they were serious artists. So it was funny.
fitting that song would be Mike Quackenbush's walkout theme then.
Oh God, because he is.
Yeah,
wrestling is performance art. It's not.
We didn't go out of business for a year or so. We were doing a storyline.
It was a storyline, and my accountant told me that I should stop doing Chikara because I've never made money on it. Because it's art, and it's like, dude, wrestling is about people punching each other, even if one of those people is Dragon.
Exactly. All right, from one medium where dudes punch each other in the face to another, comic books. Our first story right out the gate is from Newsarama. Is Stan Lee pulled out at yet another convention, the Big Apple Comic Con, citing health issues?
Okay, let's be honest here. He's really fucking old.
Yeah, in 2016 he'd done this as well as to other the San Diego Comic Con. So it's like he has a history of doing this. He's obviously, you know, he doesn't have a whole lot of years left. The idea that he's pulling out of this, it's like, it shouldn't come to a surprise to anybody.
Yeah, and I mean, to be frank, Stan Lee currently has really nothing to do with comics.
Uh-huh.
So, and there was that story a little while back about how Disney just filmed a shit ton of cameos of Stan Lee, and they're just going to insert him into movies. Like, if he dies, he'll still get to be in movies.
I think I've told former Comic Conversations host Dave, and I think I've told Daz on his Tales from the Couch show, I said, I hope one of the promos is him as a dead ghost going, ooh.
That'd be good. And, you know, he's sick right now, so I mean, when he dies, I'm probably going to say horribly offensive things because as people who listen to the show know, I'm not a big fan of Stan Lee. I think he's a fucking con artist, kind of a prick who screwed over his artist. But he's sick right now. So I just said it all, didn't I?
Yes.
I didn't go on a rant though.
No, and that's good considering you.
luckily all the people he screwed, they're dead. So it's not like he'll die and they'll come out and say bad things about him.
Exactly. He was born in 1922. He's approximately 94 years old.
He's older than Vince and he's still alive. Does that make you sad?
A little bit. But here's the thing. Marvel knew when to kick Stan out. Whereas I don't know if WWE will ever kick Vince out.
They didn't so much kick him out as he went to do other things.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. I read the Marvel Untold storybook, and they specifically and for the people that don't much care for Stan, at least I will admit this is, you know, you could question how involved he was in the creation of a lot of the early Marvel comics, but really when you come to a guy who was really kind of a guy who pushed the brand, who pushed the idea he wanted TV shows and movies, it's like, okay, and getting those characters out there, it's like, okay, you can say what you want about his contribution to the comic books, but as far as the Marvel brand and getting the characters over, it's really hard to I guess, make light of that. Try to take that away.
You could make the argument that Stan Lee, since, you know, the 70s, pushing for Marvel to get TV and stuff, eventually put them on the path that would lead to them being bought by Disney, which is a thing that meant Marvel will be around forever.
Exactly.
So
you look at other comic book publishers that have been around just as long, and their characters are not as over as the Marvel characters. So you have to presume it's because they've been in the sort of the pop culture zeitgeist with the TV shows and the movies.
Yeah, and the cartoons.
And he was very instrumental in those early years of those getting off the ground. So it's one of those things to where, you know, in the grand scheme, he was still very influential.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and that was our first news story. And our
Wait. Can I throw in another news story?
Sure.
Since it's sad, Dennis Stamp died.
At least Heaven booked him.
Heaven booked him, brother. Because I know he's there. He was on Colt Cabana's podcast a couple months ago, and he just seemed like the nicest fella.
Mm-hmm. For those of you who don't know, Dennis Stamp is on the documentary Beyond the Men. I'm sorry. They featured him as the wrestler that couldn't get booked, and the humor came from his idea of training was getting these. It couldn't have been any heavier than like 20 pounds.
They were No, dude, they were 5 pound weights.
Getting 5 pound weights in each hand and jumping on a trampoline in his underwear. And that was his wrestling training.
Because he said he didn't know when he was going to get a call. He always had to be ready, and he got ready by jumping on a trampoline.
I'm not booked!
He's not booked. Dave, when he put up the story out of dying, he had a picture of him from his younger days. Yeah. Had a big old mustache.
Yeah. He had the big, he had a hey dad physique, if you would.
Yes, like he wasn't out of shape. Like in his day, he would have been considered in shape. But now he just kind of like, he looks like a dude who's, I mean, he has arms, like you can see muscles.
But he's so. Got very much a dad physique.
Yes. And yeah. he, that picture is probably from when he was 20. And he looks to be about 70.
I got a little bit of his Titantron. Let's see if I can play a little bit of it real quick.
I'm not booked.
Yes, Dennis Knapp, you will be missed. Oh, God. I found the video version of it, and it has video footage of him jumping on the trampoline.
Well, yeah, I sent you the ballad of Dennis Stamp, and it's mostly just him jumping on a trampoline.
King of the Cockroaches is what they're billing him as here. Oh, God. Hey, I'll say this guy, this much. The guy was in better shape than me.
Yes. When he was, well, I'm in better shape than he was when he was jumping on the trampoline.
Okay, well, good for you.
When he was younger. So.
All right, there you go. And our final news story. Coming from Newsarama again, that apparently there seems to be a concerted effort on Marvel's behalf to use some kind of synergy between the movies and their comic books. Namely, you know, when the Guardians of the Galaxy movie comes out, they'll be heavily promoting the Captain America Secret Empire storyline. This is something that they're going to look to be doing from now on with all their television properties as well as their Netflix properties. The idea of they're going to use basically the media to push comic book events, comic books in general, comic book retailers. And so it's one of these things where Dave brought up a very good point. He's like, I don't know why they didn't think of doing this before.
And I had mentioned, I could have sworn they did do this before.
I think you specifically mentioned when, I don't
Spider-Man,
know.
Yeah, the original Spider-Man film.
Mm-hmm.
I could have sworn they advertised Ultimate Spider-Man or they handed out Ultimate Spider-Man, like, if you bought a ticket. They did something like this before, but never, you know, at the time, it wasn't their own movies and they didn't have, you know, 50 movies coming out a year. Like, they had Spider-Man and that was it. So, it's different. It's smart. I mean, it's a way to market that gets you way more eyes than anything else you can do, and it's free because it's their movie.
Yeah, it's one of these things where, like we mentioned earlier, where DC was looking to take advantage of the media by means of commercials pushing their DC rebirth. It only makes sense now that Marvel do the same thing. It's they're gonna push the media, they're gonna push television ads, they're gonna push radio ads, they're gonna push when you actually go to the movie, they'll be heavily promoting the Marvel brand, the Marvel comic books. And specifically, they said they want synergy as far as when you go and watch the Guardians of the Galaxy, the second movie, you'll see an ad for Captain America's Secret Empire.
Yeah, we'll get the phrase "your local comic shop" reintroduced because they're not going to do localized ads.
It'd be nice if they did that. They wouldn't have the voiceover, but they would have like a graphic come up of your local comic book distributor.
I think that's a little much to hope for. That would be incredibly cool, though, if they put up, like, a phone number and an address or something. But, I mean, for places like, you know, my hometown, there's, like, 8 comic shops. So, like, how do you – you can't pick one. You have to pick them all. And, you know, people who – I mean, the way to look at this, and it's not a one-to-one comparison, is – if a movie comes out and it's based on a book, the book sales go up every single time. It always happens. So if a comic movie advertises a comic book, would the sales go up? I don't know.
Well, we've talked about that before, how there's very little correlation. Like if Spider-Man will have a book that comes out And maybe, actually, that's a bad example, because I remember when the Amazing Spider-Man 2 movie came out, they managed to strategically have the renumbering of Spider-Man, Peter Parker, come back, and that did tremendous business.
Yeah, but that might have just been comic fans, because they wanted Peter Parker back. You can't tell. But, I mean, you know, I guess the only example I can think of is look at Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. Walking Dead sales went up when the show came out and have continued to stay up as the show's been out. It's selling more than it was before the TV show. So there's, I mean, one would think there's a connection.
I'll say this much. They've always kind of sort of done this already. I mean, obviously they've never promoted it, but the idea was when the big movie would come out, it always come around, the big summer movie would always come out the week of Free Comic Book Day. So the idea of Friday the movie would come out, and then I think Saturday, that exact same Saturday, would be Free Comic Book Day. The idea being, you know, that there's synergy there. Maybe people see the movie on Friday, or they see the movie on Saturday, and then they immediately go to the comic book store. Or they just so happen to be in the area after the movie, and they decide to check out the comic book store, because they just saw the movie. And that's,
well, I mean, from Marvel's perspective, it doesn't matter, though, because Marvel, they don't make their money on individual people buying a comic. They make their money on the comic shops buying the comic. Mm-hmm. It's a huge benefit to the comic shops, and if they're smart, then they allow, like, quick reorders on these books, or they work out some kind of deal with a retailer for, like, really good returnability deals, like during the month a movie comes out, because you order heavy under the presumption people are going to come into your shop, but you don't want to get fucked by having a bunch of books nobody bought and you can't return them.
Exactly. My only real criticism of this, and it's really a bit of a nitpick, is you're on the heels of the Guardians of the Galaxy sequel that comes out, you're promoting Captain America: Secret Empire.
Well, it's not just a Captain America book. Like, it's a big crossover.
But in theory,
it's an event.
In theory, wouldn't you rather have the big event be something correlating to the movie that just came out? Like, let's say you had a big Guardians crossover planned.
Well,
when the movie comes out.
They had their publishing plans for their comics were set before 2 weeks ago when they announced they were doing this.
Yeah, to me it's one of these things, maybe in the future they'll do things like that whenever, I presume the next movie will be, I can't even tell you.
Well, yeah, but what I'm saying is, like, Wonder Woman got pushed back recently, right?
Mm-hmm.
From when it was coming out, like, it was supposed to come out now-ish, but they pushed it back because Wonder Woman's a female character and Beauty and the Beast is coming out and they didn't want to compete.
Mm-hmm.
So they pushed it back. You can push a movie's release back. It doesn't really look good usually, but you can do it. You can't really, you know, comics have to be printed. So you can't just do it anytime you want. If they already have something planned, it kind of has to go through just because of the nature of, you know, the way the mail works, and you have to schedule time for it to be printed. You have to pay for the printing. And they can't sit on gigantic amounts of books in a warehouse somewhere. Like, they, because, you know, comics still have to come out. So they only have so much they can do. I think pushing it towards a big event like that is fine. And it also, it's sort of an attack towards the people who say, oh, Marvel changes everything for the movies. Well, Cap's not a secret Hydra agent due to a sentient cosmic cube in the movies.
Mm-hmm.
So they certainly didn't change this to fit in with the movies better.
True that, but I'm just saying for in the future, when the next movie comes out, it'd be nice if it correlated with whatever movie that came out. I think that'd probably be the way to go from here on in.
Yeah, or just have a jumping on point.
Yeah, I have a jumping on point or a new volume that comes out or a big crossover event lined up. I think in the future that'd probably be the way to go. Alright, that's going to do it for this week's news. Let's move on to our next segment, this week's books. That song's awesome.
You ever played it? You probably haven't. You weren't really TurboGrafx-16
no,
guy.
No, that's the thing. You mentioned if I played it. I immediately looked at what system it was out, TurboGrafx-16. I think I agree with the general public in the sense I never played that system and I never played this game.
It's a pretty famous game. It's not like Ease or anything, but it was a pinball game. Mm-hmm. It was the greatest home pinball game ever. Well, Aliens Crush and Devil's Crush. But it was also one of the first TurboGrafx-16 games to get put on the virtual console.
Huh.
So people remembered it. And there were only two songs in the game. That was one of them.
Yes. That's the Devil's Crush main stage theme. So I presume... You know, it is, in fact, a very good song that has... it's not one of these video game songs where it's a 30-second melody or it's a 90-second melody and then just loop it over and over again. This seems like it's an actual song with ebbs and flows, so it's cool.
Yeah, and TurboGrafx had that, like Genesis and Super Nintendo didn't sound the same. Mm. TurboGrafx had its own sound, like you can hear it in that. Mm. I don't know the science behind it or the name of the sound chips or anything, but it had its own sound. If we did bad video game music, I would have picked something from Keith Courage or... There are bad ones.
No, but that's very good music I've never heard before. The name Devil's Course I'd heard before, so the idea of, this is not a... I'm not going completely blind here. I've heard the name. I heard it's supposed to be really, really good. When you mentioned Alien Crush, yeah, as well. I didn't know it was a pinball game. I presume, Alien Crush, I thought maybe it'd be a shooter or something, or a beat-em-up or something. The idea it's a pinball game.
Best TurboGrafx games easily are Blazing Lasers, one of the best shooters ever. No. Blazing Lasers, one of the best shooters ever. Devil's Crush, which is better than Alien Crush. And Ease Book 1 and 2.
There you go.
Best TurboGrafx games.
Yeah, I never understood the digital pinball games, more or less the physical pinball. I've never been just a pinball fan.
I like pinball kind of a lot. I mean, I haven't played it in years, but when I was a kid, one of the places up the street had a couple of pinball machines. So, family vacations and shit, they always had like Street Fighter and then they had a pinball thing. Mm-hmm. And I found out all the pinball games I liked are like the famous pinball games that everyone likes. Like,
which ones?
Star Trek The Next Generation and The Addams Family.
Oh, okay.
And I found out those are very highly thought of pinball
machines. I bring that up because, like I mentioned earlier, I was in Vegas for the Ring of Honor TV tapings as well as their pay-per-view. And for those of you who are giant nerds who know exactly where this is going, Vegas is also home to the Pinball Hall of Fame.
Did you go?
I went. Every time I've gone to Vegas, I've gone to the Pinball Hall of Fame.
Do you get to play pinball for free, or do you...
You have to... Here's the thing. I remember it being you pay a nickel for each one, but they charge you the full quarter for each game, and some of them are, in fact, 50 cents. So the ones I played were the Nightmare on Elm Street one, I played the WWF Royal Rumble one, and I played another one, but I can't remember now what it was. But yeah, they have dozens and dozens of pinball machines.
Do they make pinball anymore?
Yes, they still make pinball machines.
Oh, cool. You see them now in the big truck stops. Apparently truckers like pinball.
Who would have figured, right?
Yeah.
All right, let's go in this week's comics, which are actually very few. Silver Surfer 9, Nova 4, Old Man Logan 19, Inhuman vs. X-Men 6, Astro City 42, Titans 9, Wonder Woman 18, Hal Jordan the Green Lantern 16, Flash 18, Action Comics 975, Justice League of America 2, Wrath Kings 1, and to open up this week's books from Avatar Press, we have Uber Invasion number 4, writer Karen Gillian, art by Daniel Getty.
I thought this was a really strong issue.
Honestly, aside from the first issue, and I will say this, it was a well-written book, it was very good, but it was, it was intentionally cruel because the idea they're trying to get over the Germans as being evil. With that said, I've loved every single issue. That's what, like, the first issue I liked. I can see that it was a good issue, but I thought it was particularly gory and horrific. With that said,
was this one.
it was gory-er, but it wasn't as gory as the first issue where you just had, this genocide where, you had folks dying here and there, but wasn't overly, It wasn't like it wasn't like death. Just death on the wall.
Well, in the last issue, two English fellows showed up and destroyed Boston, and we're like, oh, it's time to get to work or whatever, because England has lost the war. But we found out in this issue, and by the way, these characters, they're characters from the previous Uber series that we didn't read. There are a few others that Gillen said he's gonna reintroduce, but they showed what led up to them coming, and what that was. Even though the English government had been taken over and the military was disbanded, there were still like little resistance groups, like the research behind making their own Ubers, which is the super soldiers, had been like snuck out before the Germans came in. So they're working on making them, in secret, and they go to this woman, Stephanie, and I can't remember the guy's name, but it doesn't matter because he died. Stephanie and this other guy go to some pub in bumfuck England, and there are these two people here, and there's like a blood test they can do to see what kind of Uber they are because they're the different levels, and they're like, okay, well, she has some power. And you're actually pretty, pretty strong here. Like you could be a destroyer. And
was this the little girl that they were testing? I remember they brought.
No, she was, what happened was they tested the parents and one of the parents was kind of strong. The other one was like really strong. And then she's like, do you have any kids? Cause they kind of know like it passes down. And they're like, well, we have two. So they brought the kids in and they tested both of them. And one of the kids, he came up nothing. The other one, she's like, holy shit, she could be a battleship, or I believe battleship is what they call the, like, these are the supremely powerful ones. Like, they don't have one.
It is
the Americans
cool that,
and the English don't have one.
Yeah, it is cool that they have this ranking order, and they're all based off, I guess you would presume, boats, because they mentioned battleships, they mentioned destroyers, they mentioned cruisers. So I like the way that they have a hierarchy, and they're all based on ships, because the idea of, you know, they work in concert together, but just like, you know, all things when it comes to the military, they all have their purpose. They all help to serve one another. The idea that you're going to have the most powerful ones called the battleship, I thought that was a really cool way of doing it. Cause you think with nerds attached to, like, you know, Kieran Gillen being the comic book writer, you think naturally you'd assume he'd want to go to some Greek mythology or something. The fact that he would just make it strictly military based, I thought that was
cool. Well, it's about World War II, though, so the terminology fits. The key to this girl is she's testing higher than the battleships that they know of. So she's like possibly the most powerful one that's ever been. And, at that point, the Germans, they come in and a guy behind the door like shoots one of them, but the other one he has, you know, he's one of the super powered ones and he smokes the parents and everyone in the bar. So Stephanie grabs the little girl and books it. And, you know, this is a creepy story, so they hop down a hole and the Germans coming after them, and she takes out her gun and she puts the gun to the little girl's head. Like, at first she pulls it out, you think like, oh, she's gonna shoot the guy, but no, she puts it right on the little girl's head.
It makes perfect sense, obviously you take the humanity out of it. It makes perfect sense, the idea of, if they capture everybody, they don't want the Germans getting a hold of this little girl.
Yeah, because she's so powerful, and the little girl even asked, she's like, were you going to kill me? And she's like, yeah, just trust me, if they would have taken you, it would have been so much worse than that.
You would have been thanking me for shooting you in the head.
Yeah, so they disguise themselves as German operatives and get, like, passage on a submarine to United States.
Oh,
and you're
missing an important part with them hiding her. They hide her with another... I forget exactly the term that they're looking
for. Another
Uber?
Yeah, okay, so this Uber was like a giant woman who couldn't walk, but she was a giant and she's really fucking strong because at one point the Germans like pull them over and her big fucking paws just reach out and she grabs them and just crushes them. Like she rips the top half of their bodies off with no effort.
Yeah. And my favorite part is before she does that, she tells the little girl to close her eyes. So I'm like, that was a cute little bit.
And they put her and the little girl in like a shipping container, and then they went over on a submarine, blew up the submarine on the way to shore. Mm. So now, as far as we know, the little girl can't do anything yet. Like, we haven't got a lot into how these things work. But she, you know, she has the power, but she doesn't know it. Like, she hasn't used, she understands what's going on. She's probably about 8 or 9. Like, she gets the theory behind it all. And I was looking online at what some people said about this, and because I thought, you know, at first I'm thinking, like, man, that little girl, like, she didn't really react that much to her parents getting killed. And somebody pointed out, if she lived in England after it had been taken over, she would have seen nothing but fucking horrible shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so it's, she would have been, you know, it's terrible. She recognized that, but she would have been used to this sort
of
thing.
She would have been numb to it is what you're getting at.
Yeah, exactly. Because she's young enough that, you know, like fucking Carl in Walking Dead. Like, kids, when they grow up around that shit, they're not like other kids. So.
But yeah, that was pretty much Uber Invasion issue 4. Really liked it. This is a really great storyline. It's a shame it took us this long to finally get around to reading the Uber series, because I know this is, I don't know if there's been the one series before this, but I know whenever I would look up comic list, I'd always see Uber on there, one capacity or another.
There was just one. There was a this is like volume 2.
Oh, okay.
And I am going to go back and read it because this is so good, but.
Yeah, very good. All right, that's going to do it for Avatar Press. Let's move on to Boom Studios with Grath King's issue 1, writer Matt Kent, art by Tyler Jenkins.
Okay, so this is a weird, it was almost like it was Briggsland, but not really.
And here's the thing, it was 30 pages, but a lot of it was just, you know, establishing shots, you know, very basic minimalist storytelling. So I can't sit here and say this was a bad story or I felt like I got gypped because they gave you just enough to where, okay, I want to read the next issue. But with that said, I have no idea what this book is and where it's going.
What it's about is there's basically just this plot of land and these people live on it. Mm-hmm. And I believe they call it the Grass Kingdom.
Yeah, it's very much like Briggsland. It's the idea that these isolationists, they don't want any part of modern society. They want to be off the grid. So the idea of, you know, they're not attached to society in any way, shape, or form. And in this issue, they had someone trespass and come to their territory. And they're like, look, you're causing nothing but trouble. We could take care of you.
Well, they thought the sheriff of the neighboring town sent him, and the sheriff did send him. Mm-hmm. But, and they, you know, pointed out, like, you're trespassing, we could have killed you, but we didn't. We're going to take you back, but if you come back, we will shoot you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you shouldn't be here, and tell the sheriff to mind his own business. And in the end, he goes to meet with the sheriff. I'll get to why. So it's called the Grass Kingdom, and there is a king. Like, his family has owned the land for like 100 years, but he lets the other people live on it. But there's a family. It's I believe his name is Robert. He is the king, but he has a little bit of a drinking problem. Mm-hmm. And then there's his brother, who is a cop. Like, he used to be a real cop, but he just kept the uniform and the cop car. And now he upholds the law in this little place here. So that's nice for him. But they kind of show the problems with his brother's drinking and that, but they also showed why he drinks. When he had a young daughter and they were playing outside or whatever, and he went into the house to take a nap and she ended up drowning in the river. Oof. Or the lake that like separates them. That's like the border of their territory is this lake. So she ended up drowning, and I guess he turned to drinking after that. But the kid they caught, he was probably like 20 something. He asked about like the serial killer who went to the neighboring town and killed a bunch of people, and they know he was from the Grass Kingdom, and they're like, oh, that's bullshit. None of our people here are serial killers. In the end, when he got back, he immediately went to the sheriff, and the sheriff had like pictures of all the people in the town, and he had the Grass Kingdom killer and Like, that was very much what he was looking for. They gave us no indication that they are right. The cop seemed like sort of a stand-up dude. But we don't know, because it's the first issue, and we only got so much in these characters. His two of his suspects were the cop and his brother, the king, and I neither of them struck me as being serial killers. Mm-hmm. But we only saw like four people who live in this town, four or five. So we don't even know how many people live there. It looks like it's a decent piece of land, but you know, you don't know. So it was an interesting start.
Yeah, it's very much, you know, you mentioned the comparisons to Brigsland. Brigsland is dealing with a similar society, but at the same time, they're very different stories, whereas this comes off as the Grass Kingdom versus society, where Brigsland is very much, you know, the wife trying to make their little their city trying to make it legit, because it's very much, in Brigsland's instance, it's very much been converted into like a white power movement, a terrorist organization, where she's trying to take it legit, because you know, she's thought, you know, there's something admirable, the idea of, you know, living off the grid and just, you know, supporting yourself. And that's very much what this series is. It's the idea of they're just trying to live on their own. They don't want to be bothered by society. But at the same time, society, you know, they're not 100% cool with what they're doing. And, they're actively trying to sabotage their society. So I'm interested to see where this is going. I mentioned a lot of this was, you know, done in with no words, or very few words. The idea of they're trying to get over, you know, with establishing shots. The idea of, you know, they're telling a story with visuals as opposed to dialogue. And I like it, and I like where it's going. But with that said, I'm not 100% sure if I like this series or not. But you know, give it a few more issues to see one way or another where I stand. But I like what I read so far. And Matt Kintz, a guy who we've read from Valiant, who has a history of producing really really good series.
Well, he doesn't write his own books.
Yeah, I was like, really, should we have credited Jeff Lemire with this?
Jeff Lemire for co-writing. This is why he left Marvel. He had to help Matt Kent write his creator-own book.
I would like it if Matt Kent isn't a real person, and it's just another surname for Jeff Lemire.
He's a collection. Well, they hired Peter Milligan to write that Britannia series, and we thought, well, that's kind of weird. Why did you bring Peter Milligan in to write something that takes place in Roman times? Maybe he's writing this. No, this wasn't weird enough to be Milligan. It could have been Lemire, though. The art kind of looked like Lemire art.
A little bit, where the, you know, it kind of looks, just, it looks washed out and it's kind of painted.
Yeah, just saying.
It's going to be like, we were talking about Stanley earlier. It's going to be like a Jack Kirby, where he's responsible for most of these comic books that we review come out.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. All right. That's going to do it for, Boom Studios. Let's move on to DC Comics with Justice League of America, issue 2. Writer Steve Orlando, art by Ivan Rez. The Justice League, basically Extremis part 2.
The Justice League of America left America.
Yes.
They chased the extremists, not the ECW extremists, but just a group of anti-heroes who want to take over the world to save it from itself.
Okay, you say that, and from the looks of these characters, I don't know if you got this impression, but I clearly got this impression. These characters are Marvel villains.
Sort of, yeah, because the lead guy is Doctor Doom.
And then the other villain featured in this issue, especially with the color scheme and his magnetic powers, it was obvious that he's
Magneto. And Sabretooth was there too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are inspired by Marvel villains.
I always love when DC and Marvel does this. They'll have the parody of the other company's superheroes or villains in this instance.
But they no-sell it.
Yeah. And it's obviously a parody, so it's legally different where they don't get in trouble, but you know.
Well, I think they look different enough that they couldn't get in trouble over this.
Yeah, because I'm even looking at the cover here. It's a guy. He looks sort of alien, but it's obvious that his face is iron. He's got the screws in his face. He's got the purple robe with the the giant pins on his chest, obviously reminiscent of Doctor Doom.
Yeah, well, but in the story, they end up going back to, I think his name is even Lord Havoc, goes back to his home kingdom, and his family was, the king and queen, I guess, were murdered in a coup years ago, and there's a neighboring kingdom that they've been at war with forever. Or there's a civil war going on right now, but there is a neighboring kingdom. And he went there and used his team to set everything right in their fashion, which is pretty much obey or die. Mm-hmm. Because people are terrible. They eat their own children here, one of them said. but he takes over, and the people are really happy because the guys who controlled before were bad people. So the Justice League, they won't go after them. But there are like army dudes there, and they're like, hey, if you come in here, it's an act of war.
Mm-hmm.
So we bring politics into Justice League.
Well, you know, if this guy's going to be Dr. Doom, you got to do the Latveria sovereign nation gimmick.
Well, yeah, they can't attack, or they will attack the other country back. Which
if they are the Justice League of America, it would not look good if they were attacking a sovereign nation.
No, it wouldn't. And this is a story I've seen done before, and I wonder how far they'll go into it. They haven't gotten a ton into the team fighting amongst themselves.
Well, you had that a little bit in that first issue. You got a tiny bit of that, but they clearly established that the extremists are very much a bigger threat, and really they set aside their differences to deal with these guys. Because you're always going to have everyone. You know, there's many feuds within the team. People not necessarily getting along, but the big obvious one is everybody has a problem with Lobo.
And yeah, but there was a lot of nonverbal comedy with Lobo, where you know someone's giving a speech about doing the right thing, and you kind of see Lobo in the background, like, I don't give a shit. Like, I'm only here because I owe Batman. I told him I'd do it, but you guys are a bunch of fucking Nancys. It's really kind of funny how they do that, and I honestly don't understand how he can remain on the team, because he is going to strongly clash with some of these characters.
Well, I think that's intentional, because if you had the team, everyone getting along, there wouldn't be much. I think obviously you want conflict being the thing that helps move this book along,
to make it different from the Justice League.
But my only question is, then the book is very much then the Lobo book. Because really, you have Batman on the team, and he's a big star, and I presume that's why a lot of people read this book. But with that said, you read this book, and it's very clear, front and center, the star of this book is, in fact, Lobo.
Well, he's the most colorful character.
Like, I just get myself motivated to read this book, because I'm like, oh, God, there's two Justice League books, and this has the geeks in it. But I'm like, oh, wait, I forgot Lobo's on the team.
I do like that it's using underused characters, and I don't hate any of the characters. It's just we're not getting a lot of the characters. So I don't... Midnighter and Apollo should join the team.
Oh, because we need
and then
two
we
Batman
can finally have Batman and Midnighter meet. And Midnighter's like, bro, I already fought this fight 1,000 different ways, and then he breaks his fucking back. It's like, what's up, Bane?
I'm shocked they haven't done that storyline yet. Actually, that would be pretty good. Midnighter comes to Gotham City.
I have to believe they've met. Because Nightwing knows Midnighter.
And I've read a little bit of the Midnighter and Apollo, I mean, the Midnighter solo series. And I forgot who wrote that. It may have been...
King.
Yeah, it was King. And it was... I read a couple issues of that, and that was good, but I never got the impression that he was going to Gotham and he conflicted with any of the Bat family outside of Grayson.
I have to read that because I love King so much, and I don't think he wrote the entire run, but he wrote it for a while. I have to read that. But, you're missing something there. You should have those characters meet. Be good. Yeah. He can make Batman humble.
Old country way?
Old country way. That's what you do.
Well, then again, Midnighter's married Mana. I don't know if Apollo would be cool with that.
No, he he's not gonna fuck his ass in a gay way. Oh, okay. He fucks his ass in another way.
To make him humble?
Yeah, he breaks his back, then he makes him humble, then he fucks his ass.
For those of you who are wondering what we're talking about, it's the Sheik to the, it's a reference to the Iron Sheik video if you haven't already checked it out. And I believe on YouTube it's Iron Sheik Goes Nuts. It's a great video.
It's pretty amazing. poor fucking Brian Blair.
We've talked about it before, but people who are listening to the show for the first time, they've gone to Brian Blair, and Brian Blair has no idea what Iron Sheik's talking about.
As far as he knows, there is no heat. And we think Brian Blair, like Sheiky, might have got him confused with someone else.
Yeah.
Because when these interviews are done, Sheiky's clean now, but he was like on crack when he did the, like legit, he was on crack.
Mm-hmm.
So he wasn't totally in his right mind.
Yeah, and there were two killer bees, so it could be the other one.
Yeah. Jim Brunzel, was he the other killer bee?
Yes.
Ah.
He was the one that Sheiky liked. He even mentioned the video.
Oh. Well, it couldn't have been him then. All right.
Or maybe he got the two confused. All right, that's going to do it for Justice League of America issue 2. Liked it. Very much excited to see where it's going. Like the extremist line. Let's move on to Action Comics 975, writer Dan Jurgens, art by Doug Mankey.
I really like this too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, this was, and this
I
was liked, great.
What I really liked was the backup.
Yeah, because this was a double plus size book. It wasn't an annual, but it was, I think it was 35 pages. So it wasn't,
because it was issue 975.
Yeah.
It was a special anniversary. Every 25 issues is a special anniversary issue.
Oh, before we go into this, this is advertised as Superman Reborn Part 2. We forgot to read Superman last week, so I considering we had such a light week this week, I read last week's Superman. There wasn't much to it. Basically, what happened was, we've seen before how Dr. Oz has kidnapped all these characters. One of them broke out, and the one character that broke out was Crypto the Superdog.
Yay. Okay, so in this issue, it's Jonathan has been captured, and they know Clark Kent did it. Mm-hmm. So they go to find him, and they go to his house, and there is a really cool scene of the guy who was Clark Kent. He turned into, like, pretty much all of Superman's big villains, because he's like, he's basically like, who am I?
Yeah, because Superman confronted Clark Kent, and that sounds odd to say, but he confronted Clark Kent, and he's like, who are you really? He's like, don't you know who I am? And then he's like, Clark Kent? He's on no, and he transformed to all the famous Superman villains.
Yeah, and the key here is, and this should have been a hint as to who he was, although the reveal came pretty quick after, he turned into Mongol, he turned into Brainiac, he turned into a lot of guys, but he also turned into Cyborg Superman. Cyborg Superman does not exist in the New 52. So that would have told you, okay, this is a character who is Superman's past.
Actually, I will say this, he does exist. He I believe in the Supergirl comic book, she was dealing with him.
Well, he shouldn't, because he's Hank Henshaw in the other Superman book we read. Like, we've met him, and he's a normal dude. Like, they had that issue where Superman kind of dealt with it. The Cyborg Superman, you know, him in the Superman suit comes from the Death of Superman storyline. Death of Superman never happened in the New 52. Like, it was him in the Superman costume.
Mm-hmm.
So that definitely shouldn't have happened. But anyway, he eventually realizes it's Mixel Piddalick. And so he reveals this, and he took Jonathan because Superman didn't play with him anymore. So he captured his son, thought maybe he'd play with him. So, you know, we have the reveal, and then we get the backup. Why did Mr. Mixel Piddalick capture Jonathan Kent? Well, he tells him that, you know, he's been used in big storylines where he was actually kind of evil. His whole deal is he's a fifth dimensional imp. And they have basically god powers. They could do anything.
Mm-hmm.
That would also be how he remembers Superman from before. Because he exists outside the DC universe. He's aware that he is in Superman's cartoons.
That was great when they showed stuff from the animated series, and I was like, wow. Yeah,
because he's from the fifth dimension, so he can see everything.
Yeah, and one of the characters that he interacts with was Batfink.
Because he said he's like, what happened was Mr. Oz captured him. Mm-hmm. And he explained, everything that's going on in Superman's life has been orchestrated by me. And I need this to go down a really specific road. And the one thing I can't have is randomness. And you are a giant ball of randomness. So that's why I'm capturing you, and you're going to stay here. And then, you know, when I'm done with Superman, maybe I'll let you go. So he's trapped him in like limbo.
And basically he's like, you know, you're this being from the fifth dimension. He's like, I've kept you here for eons, but you know, you're a creature from the fifth dimension. It means nothing to you. You'll live forever. So what do you care? And in fact, when he mentioned, he's like, oh, eventually my friends and wife are going to come looking for me, or Superman's going to come looking for me. And they're like, look, they're also creatures of the fifth dimension. I'm sure they barely even notice that you're gone.
He said, you know, 2,000 years to them is like nothing. Mm-hmm. So they're not even going to notice you're gone. But what his problem was, Superman never came to save him. And he thought Superman's
justification
buddies.
For it was awesome. Or, Dr. Oz tried to play it off. He's like, who justified? No, it was Jonathan. There we go. Jonathan said, oh.
Yeah, Jonathan thought, he's like, well, because apparently Superman used to tell Jonathan stories about him. Mm. And he said, you know, he always kind of described you as like a child. So he probably just figured you stopped coming around because you grew up.
And he was offended.
Yeah, he couldn't accept this. He was actually pissed off, and this is a character who doesn't really get pissed off, but he was mad because he thought like Superman just completely abandoned him. He let this happen to him. He said, I was being tortured here, and he never came to help me. He's like, he helps out. It doesn't matter if it's a villain or not. He helps everyone out, but he didn't help me out. So that's why he's mad. And he fucked around with Jonathan. He's like, he eventually got out of, Mr. Oz's prison by, you know, he does the gimmick where Superman sends him back to the fifth dimension by tricking him into saying his own name backwards. Mm-hmm. So he repetitively said his own name backwards, which apparently really hurt, and it eventually let him break out. However, Mr. Oz knew he broke out, and he was still after him. So when he turned into Clark Kent, he really turned into Clark Kent. Like, he even made himself forget who he was.
Yep.
Took away all his powers so that he wouldn't, you know, Oz wouldn't know. And it worked. I mean, it's not going to fucking work now because he's out in full force, but he kind of fucked with Jonathan. He's like, hey, if you can figure out the secret word, you can go home. And he did. It was, he used to call him Purple Hat, but he couldn't pronounce it because he's a little kid. Mm-hmm. So he had to say the fucked up way he said Purple Hat backwards. He's like, oh, okay, you did it. And then they went, you know, they went to his house and he's like, oh, but I didn't say you could stay here.
He's like, won the game. I said I let you return home, but, you know, there is the caveat. I didn't say how long.
And he's like, that's a trick like Superman used to always play on me. So he took him back, and yeah, that's the deal. He's pissed off. He can do anything, and he's got Superman's kid. And then at the end, Superman was talking to Lois, and he's like, well, we still have to go get Jonathan. And she's like, who's Jonathan? And that was how the issue ended.
Yeah, he's like, I can mess with the reality. I can make it as though he would never existed. And Superman remembered, but clearly it was obvious that Lois didn't remember. And he said it was going to erase him from the memories. And they had a photo book with, you know, with pictures of Jonathan growing up. And after Mixel People messed with him, all the photos were gone.
Yeah, and him as like a threatening villain is kind of scary because he can do so much. Like, there's no limit to his power. Superman has never beaten him because he can't. You can't kill him. He's just tricked him into sending himself back, and he's got the gimmick where he only comes back every 3 months because he likes messing around with Superman.
I thought there were rules to him interacting with that reality that he couldn't come back within 3 month period.
Well, because he said in this, he basically said like he's the one who decided that. Mm. So I mean, there are other. I don't know if this is going to tie into the bigger story. I mean, Oz was there, so it's got that. But I mean, in Rebirth, and we still don't have the Justice Society. Johnny Thunder, he was an old man, and he had the pen, and that pen that it's a fifth dimensional imp, but a good one. And then you know, Batmite, obviously. But there are, there are other ones. So, no, this was a pretty good reveal. I mean, I didn't expect it at all.
Yeah, obviously they'd done the big reveal on most of the comic book news sites before the issue came out. So I already had this spoiled, and it's part of the reason why we were going to review this book. So that's part of the reason why I didn't include it in the news. Because I figured we're going to do the reveal, and it's like, okay, that's a genuine reveal that I would have not ever seen coming. Because my idea was, oh, it's going to be a Clark from another dimension, especially if they're doing something in Rebirth, the idea they're bringing back the multiverse. It's like, okay, well, Clark is probably from a universe where he's just Clark Kent, and that's it. He's not secretly Superman. But I was incorrect.
And it was a good reveal. It makes total sense, as much sense as this can make, and it was a surprise. So that's a good swerve, Vince Russo.
Yes. And another example of them doing the Rebirth thing, I don't think this character has been involved in the New 52 in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, I don't know. Because I gave up on it so quick.
So this is another instance.
If he did, he was probably like a more scary looking imp who like ripped people's legs off and hit them with it.
Yeah. Because
New 52.
Dark. It was dark and scary and sad.
Yeah, because that's what you do.
All right, let's move on to our next book. Flash 18, writer Joshua Williamson, art by Neil Goog. Sins of the Father, Part 1. You remember what happened in this book?
Can you start?
Sure. The book opens up with Wally West's memories of his father growing up. Obviously, it cuts to him being, Reverse Flash. And he wants to know more about his father, so obviously he contacts Barry Allen, and I think in this issue specifically, he met Barry Allen's father, who was out of jail recently. Or has been out of jail for a while, so the idea is they want to know more about, Kid Flash's dad. And I forget what else happens in this issue. Do you remember this issue now? I knew you read this today.
Yeah, he's chilling with Iris and Flash, but then, Flash's dad, said something about getting out of prison that reminded him of his dad, and he kind of got pissed off and had to leave. So him and Flash are then running around, and he's like, well, you know, we should go visit your dad. Because you haven't talked to him since you found out. And he's like, last issue I already broke into the prison and found out he got transferred to some other place out of Iron Heights. And he's like, where? He's like, oh, it's called Belreve. And Flash is like, ooh, okay, that's kind of bad. Like, that's not a good prison. So they ran down to Louisiana to go to Belreve, but they couldn't, you know, do Flash's normal thing, like, you know, run through the walls because Wally doesn't know how to do, or Kid Flash doesn't know how to do
that's,
that.
That's yet. The one thing they converted in this issue. Barry Allen's dad was like, you know, eventually you got to tell the kid who you are, that you're the Flash. He's like, yeah.
Yeah, because he still doesn't know.
Yeah, he's like, I've seen what happens when people know my secret identity. He's like, I can't afford them something to happen to them. So that's purposely why I keep myself anonymous.
It's kind of stupid though, because like, if there are villains who know who that Flash is Barry Allen, couldn't they just tail him and realize that Iris and young Wally are friends with him?
Yeah.
Yeah, like them knowing doesn't really, but whatever, that's a separate comics thing. So they run down, they get into Belreve, and Amanda Waller's there, of course. And she denies that Reverse Flash or any speedster is in her prison. She's lying. They know that, but then tells them, like, you know, you broke a bunch of laws, like breaking into a federal prison. And since the Justice League helped me with the Max Lord thing, I'm not going to do anything, but don't come in here again or you'll both end up, you know, prisoners here.
And
so,
and since they casually mentioned what happened with that, and Wally asks, he's like, what are you talking about? The Waller's secret group? And it's then.
Oh, yeah, because he was talking about the Suicide Squad and Wally or Barry blew him off.
And it's from then they cut to Flash hitting up Boomerang for information.
He went down to, and Boomerang was on a Suicide Squad mission.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I mean, that's where we leave off.
Good issue. I like the stuff they're setting
up. It's just, yeah, I didn't mind this issue, but the thing is, this wasn't a Flash, this was a Kid Flash issue.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, if you're not going to give him his own book, this is the only way to do it. But this kind of feels like buying time until the Batman crossover.
It's a little bit what it is. Because, like, they're telling a story, but it feels sort of janky. It feels like this is like a long-term storyline. They're just buying time, like you mentioned, until the crossover happens. Because I read this, and it seems like they have a vague direction where they're going. But unlike previous arcs, I can't really tell what that is right now.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll just keep following it along.
Yeah, it's a good book, and obviously when we get to the crossover, maybe it'll make a little bit more sense, or maybe this is something post-crossover.
Oh, hey, you want raw spoilers?
Sure,
on this show,
we record,
we don't have a lot of comics?
Yeah, we record the show, obviously, on Monday, so give me some Monday Night Raw spoilers.
Okay, so, Foley said he wanted to fire Stephanie,
mm-hmm.
and she said they couldn't. Also, the crowd chanted CM Punk at Triple H and got him off the script because he didn't know how to respond. They did it to Stephanie, too. He said he wanted to fire her, and then Triple H came out, and he's like, you should be kissing her feet, and you're fat, loser, dumb, blah, 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 blah. He gave Mr. Sacco to Triple H, but then Triple H kind of booted him out. Then he threatened to fire Dewey, who works in creative, and you know, all that. And then so Triple H kind of like beats him down after Stephanie hits him in the balls, and Rollins comes out, and he comes out on a crutch, but then he drops the crutch and runs in and starts beating the shit out of Triple H, and apparently the crowd was really behind him for acting like a babyface.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently then Triple H hit him with the crutch in the knee and then kept hitting him and then put his, Indian deathlock on him.
Ooh.
And the refs had to break it up, and then Rollins got up, but then Triple H hit him and knocked him down again. So Triple H, of course, has to go over everyone, but this was to build him up as a heel. So it was okay that they did this. This sounds interesting enough that I will watch it.
Speaking of being someone being laid out, that actually transitions to our next book. Hal Jordan, The Green Lantern Corps, issue 16, writer Robert Venditti, art by Rafael Sandoval.
Really trying to put Guy over in this book.
So, I will say this. Guy is yet to be a comic book boy of mine, but he's on the borderline, and this was a great issue of Hal Jordan, The Green Lantern Corps.
Yeah, so what happened was in the last issue, they split up all the green and yellow lanterns into teams so they could go catch the yellow lanterns who did not come along with the good yellow lanterns to work with the green lanterns. So they're going to arrest them all. Gave them the option, like, you can work for us or you can go to jail. Guy picked the baddest of the bad ones.
Archilio.
Yeah, and went for him and told him, like, hey, brother, drop the ring. We're going to fight like it's old school. So they fought without powers, and Guy is just getting the shit kicked out of him. Just absolutely brutalized, but he keeps having these flashbacks to his dad. His dad was a drunk who used to beat him up.
Mm-hmm.
So it gets him fired up, and he ends, and this is very brutal for like a DC mainstream comic, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Guy ends up firing up. And, you know, he he decks him so hard that he punched his eyeball out of his head. And they showed it, and then he just starts pounding on him. Hal and John Stewart were there for this whole thing. Mm-hmm. And they were gonna break it up because it looked like Guy was getting killed. But then they're like, no, no. Hal's like, no, he has to do this on his own. So Guy ends up, beating the shit out of him, made the guy say uncle.
Yeah, cause
literally he said, I yield.
You mentioned earlier how, you know, while he was getting beat up, he had memories of his father beating him up. And that was his motivation to keep fighting. So when Guy started to win, it would cut to, scenes where he eventually stood up to his father and beat him up. So they showed the parallels. It's like, oh, that's the reason. That's how Guy gets his motivation.
Well, he said no one has, he's like, the reason I keep getting up is because no one's ever hit me as hard as my dad did.
Exactly.
So he, but he's damn near dead. Like, they put him in the little ring thing and they're like, yeah, he's got like massive internal injuries and this is bad news. Maybe this is how they're going to bring Guy Gardner Warrior back. His Vandalorian physiology will reveal itself.
Can they not? Like, I understand the whole point of Rebirth is bringing back.
He had a shirt with W on it.
Oh, God. No.
So he's going to have guns for hands soon.
Oh, well. There's a reason why he's not one of my boys. So if they're going to do that, then I completely wipe my hands clean of him.
Oh, and the other one was they brought, the Blue Lantern back and, Ganthet and his wife, the last two Guardians, they want to, I think they want to bring the Blue Lanterns back. I think that was their goal. Mm-hmm. But they had him back, so they're doing something with him.
I've already looked at May solicitations. This is leading to something big and I don't want to reveal what it is.
Thank you.
But, They have some big plans for this book, so I'm very much excited to see where this goes.
Alright. Well, I'm glad we read this book and not the book with the jobbers.
Oh, the Green Lanterns book with the two Green Lanterns that are on the Justice League? Yeah.
The ones who are on the Justice League but are still the jobbers.
That's written by Sam Humphries.
Yeah, Sam Humphries, not a fan of you, brother. It's not your fault those characters aren't cool, though.
He's a nice enough guy, I've met him, but,
He's not a bad writer. He's just a very unexciting writer.
I'd argue that. I've read a couple of his issues. I cringe. I'm like, this is really bad.
Yeah, I've stopped reading his. We at Comic Conversations have stopped reading Sam Humphries' books.
Even books that were kind of important, we're like, no. And we gave him time after time. I think it was originally they put him on Avengers AI, and that was good for a while, but even
was good.
We gave up on that. I think when they put him on Guardians, we gave that a try, and I think they gave him the crossover Black Vortex, and it's like, we've given him try after try, and it's like, he's just not our cup of tea.
Black Vortex is really bad, but I don't know if that was totally his fault, because he's being told to write it.
But eventually, that led to him being given the reins for Guardians, and his run wasn't particularly awe-inspiring. Then again, there's a pretty low bar when you're coming off the Bendis run.
Yeah, I guess.
Okay. Wonder Woman 18, writer Greg Parker, art by Blix Avely. God Watch Part 2. What's that?
A downturn in the art. Mm-hmm. I thought, well, for part of it. Part of the art was okay. Mm-hmm. Part of it was not so good. This was, back in the past, and, Phobos and Deimos, by the way, taking the little girl's face is the creepiest image.
But it's something like, you expect, you know, these gods to do something. It's not just the idea that they're, you know, they have her daughter and they're keeping her away from her. It's like, no, they have to have their torture be somewhat entertaining and ironic.
Yeah, it's just, they took her face and like she's sitting there and her mom's talking to, cause her mom hasn't completed what they want yet to get their daughter back. And she's talking to her. She's like, oh, they're going to take you to the zoo tomorrow because you like the zoo so much. And I'm just thinking, she doesn't have a face. Like, how is she going to enjoy the zoo? She can't see anything, but whatever. It showed why Cheetah hated Wonder Woman because Cheetah was going to look on the African God guy, for reasons. And Wonder Woman gave her this little, like, emergency, you hit this button and it'll call me from anywhere thing. But the girl who's trying to save her kid, her sidekick who ended up dying in the last issue when she went through the robot stuff, she saved her personality and knowledge and turned it into a living AI. She is now called Dr. Cyber, which...
That's terrible.
That's a fucking horrible name, but whatever. She can, like, basically hack into anything here. So they wanted to keep her away from pre-Cheetah. So she realized, like, hey, I can get into anything. So she just made a bunch of disasters happen. So Wonder Woman would be busy. And she also broke her little signal thing. So Wonder Woman finally flies out because she knew where she was and finds the little wrist warning device she gave her laying broken on the ground. And then she sees Cheetah and Cheetah's like, hey, you said you'd help me and you lied and then went to fight. Now, I mean, I'm sure this is going to get to something because the guys are looking for Themyscira. Mm-hmm. And I assume in this storyline, we will find out what happened to Themyscira, why Wonder Woman can't get there. I assume it's tied in, but there is a problem with, like drama when we know Cheetah is eventually going to be cured by Wonder Woman and will just be a normal person again.
Yeah. Cause in this, they showed her. You know, I don't know if it's this or the present where she tried to make her go straight. The idea when she didn't show up, she reverted to her own ways and started eating people again.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. But because the story split has gotten more confusing.
Yeah, it's a little bit. This is one of these instances where I feel like a broken record this time, but I have to keep saying it'd be nice if they made this two separate books as opposed to telling two separate stories with the same book.
This one is the one that's in the past because I think Wonder Woman didn't speak like perfect English.
Yeah, there were instances where she was talking to the doctor and she made all these grammatical errors and the doctor was quick to correct her.
Yeah, so I think that's the key that this is the one in the past, but I am getting more confused. I think they have different, do they have different artists?
I have to imagine they have different artists. Let's see if I can very quickly pull that up. But the thing is, they keep switching artists too, and that doesn't help either.
Yeah, like if they could have a consistent artist for each one, it would be easier to track. Otherwise, I'm going to have to go back and look at old issues and figure out what's going on. It wasn't a bad issue. I'm not saying that. It's just since they're running the two storylines concurrently and they take place at different times, but they're kind of tied together, it's sort of a difficult book to follow a little bit.
Yeah, the last issue of Wonder Woman was written by a different artist, but let me look at the last time we got something from this God Watch storyline. Let's see if this had these. No, you're right. They are doing the thing that you would hope for, where the stuff from the past is drawn by the same artist, whereas the stuff present day, that's done by a completely different artist. So you have an instance where you're dealing with two different artists for the two different storylines.
Yeah. Oh, you want one more spoiler?
Sure. Since we're pretty much done with Wonder Woman.
Corey Graves is going to get fired because they did that weird, I don't know if you remember this, WWE did this weird show on the network where they had like JBL and Paul Heyman on and they were supposed to shoot, but they just spouted WWE bullshit. Mm-hmm. So this time, I guess it was JBL and Corey Graves, and they brought up AJ Styles versus Shane McMahon, and JBL's like, oh, it's going to be great, and Corey Graves is like, AJ's like the best wrestler, and he could have an amazing match, and now he's not going to because he's wrestling Shane. Somebody should clue Corey in. When they tell you to shoot, they don't really mean you should shoot. So I think he's going to have to eat some shit.
I don't think he'll get fired, though.
And they refer to Corey Graves being picked as the number two announcer on some Twitter vote poll, which he was referring to the Observer Awards.
Ooh.
Which is awesome. I hope Dave cries.
That's a no-no.
It's funny, though. What's the next book?
Titans Issue 9, writer Dan Abnett, art by Brent Booth. Made in Manhattan, okay. Part 2.
So, we found out in the last issue that the Fearsome Five were controlling Meta Solutions, where people are given and taken away from superpowers. And, you know, Bumblebee was all happy because she had a fancy suit and could use her powers, and it was so great. And they wanted to fight, but they're like, no, like, Mammoth is here, yeah, but he doesn't have his powers anymore. And, you know, only two of us kept our powers, but we're using them for good now. So they end up leaving without a fight, and they go back to the place, and Arsenal, he points out, he's like, you know, I know a little bit about, like, redemption and stuff, because, you know, drug addict. And he gives this whole speech, and then they're like, okay, well, Roy says, you know, they'll be all right. And he's like, no, it doesn't happen that fucking fast.
It doesn't
fast.
Happen overnight. It took me years to get clean.
He's like, it took me years to get clean. These guys were fighting the Justice League like 3 weeks ago, which they were in that one storyline we read of the Hitch Run. He's like, they were fighting them like 3 weeks ago. There's no way they got clean this quick. And it's like, okay, well, Nightwing and Wally, you guys sneak into the place and see what's what. And they do. They sneak in and everything's shielded, so they can't communicate. Omen is like doing the psychic connection thing, but she points out, like, she can't really sense anything wrong, but since Simon is one of the Fearful Five and he's more powerful than her, he might be blocking her, and he apparently was. So they're going around, they're looking for stuff, and then fucking Mammoth comes out and starts beating the shit out of him. They point out he's stronger than he's ever been, which makes them realize they're not only, you know, not only can they steal powers, but they can give powers too for like people who pay them money. So they're basically functioning as DC's power broker now.
which is great.
But they're beating the shit out of him, and the rest of the team is going to try to save him. And Bumblebee, like Simon was talking to some group of guys in robes about what they're doing and how the Titans won't be able to stop them because the Titans will be dead. And then Bumblebee grabbed her suit and she goes and flies off to help them too. So I imagine they didn't plan for her and she will save the day, thus allowing her onto the team.
Yes.
So it's not a sausage fest.
Well, and Donna Troy.
Sausage Fest and Donna Troy.
And what's her name, the other girl?
Oh, shit, you're right.
Omen.
Well, it'll be even then. It'll be three guys and three girls.
There you go, perfect.
Yeah.
And that was pretty much this week's issue. Am I missing anything else?
No, we hit all the points.
Okay, as long as we're interjecting every single comic review with something pro-wrestling related, since we're mentioning Titans... And someone who was a big fan of Marv Wolfman and George Perez's Teen Titans, one Christopher Daniels, who over the weekend won the Ring of Honor World title. So a shout
interviewed him for the show. He's a super nice guy.
Yeah, he's a super nice guy, huge comic book fan. If you haven't already, check out that interview. I'll be sure to link it in the description. It's a really good interview. The guy really knows his stuff. He's obviously written comics before. I think he's written another comic book with All Yeah Comics. I'll have to be sure to check that out. We can review that as well.
I was not aware of that.
But, congratulations. Huge shout out to our boy Christopher Daniels for winning the Ring of Honor World Championship after taking 15 years to win the damn thing.
Well, and he's probably only winning it because Adam Cole is going to WWE. But, yeah. Well deserved. He's always been really good wrestler. And also, you know how you know he's good?
How do I know he's good?
Sorry about the noise. I'm getting ready.
Is this something. An Observer Live conversation where you're banging pots? Clang, 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 clang.
I'm diabetic. I have to eat. Vince Russo, on his shoot interview he did after he left TNA, buried the shit out of Chris Daniels.
Ooh.
Over and over and over again. Like, he was a guy, no personality. thinks people care about wrestling, but they don't. All they care about is stories. And it was funny because it was after Russo left, but I was watching TNA at the time, and Daniels was by far the most entertaining character on the show. But he said he had no personality and kept buried him over and over again on the show. And now he's ROH champion, and ROH draws more than TNA, so fuck you.
I remember someone made a meme of Daniels winning the belt, and one of the things was, you know, the internet was not super on board with Goldberg winning the title, and they were really cool with the idea of Daniels winning the title, and they made the meme of, boo, old bald guy winning the title, and then it cuts to Daniels with the title. Yay!
Well, the difference is Daniels never left wrestling. True. Like, he was always around. So, Goldberg was a quitter.
Yep.
A quieter.
Quieter.
As they're called on the internet.
Abdullah? Dave, if I'm not mistaken, he still wrestles, doesn't he?
Yeah, Big Japan.
Yeah.
Try just an indie. Go, kill him.
I thought we had a rule.
What is that rule? No banging pots and pans?
No banging pots on the air.
I just like that because they apparently think like people are doing that because they're not planning on calling in and banging pots and pans. They're just suddenly deciding to do it.
It's spontaneous. It's just a thing that happens, yeah. Right?
Didn't we have a rule about that? You guys, you really got to respect the rule about banging pots and pans.
God, how about WB Network for ECW?
If they can get on. I mean, I think Paul would die and go to heaven if he had national WB exposure. I mean, that's...
Oh, my God.
I snuck in right before the show ended.
Oh, God, I got to call into Observer Live. bang some pots and pans. Be amazing. And ask about Howard Stern's penis.
Be awesome.
That's good. Next book.
Yeah, we're steadily ending the DC portion of the show. We covered all the mainline DC books, but let's move on to with Astro City issue 42, writer Kurt Busiek, art by Brent Eric Anderson.
This is a cute little one shot.
As much as I love the storylines where they have the multiple issue story arcs, obviously the what is it? What was that one storyline that we really liked with the elder superheroes?
The
Cracker Jack?
Oh yeah, the Cracker Jack one. I really like the robot one.
Yeah, and those are really good, but I'm still in the opinion that the best issues are always the one-off ones.
Well yeah, the last issue was fantastic. The one about, Astronaut.
Mm-hmm.
I think what it is, Busiek, he has like these ideas for stories. And it's a really strong idea, but he knows he can get it done in one issue. And when he has a strong story that only takes one issue to tell, obviously the point of the story is simpler. So it comes off better because of that. It's easier to get. There's not a lot to think about. And this one was about a villain, Mr. Manta. He was a villain back in the day, and he ended up getting in a fight, and he crashed in the water on an island.
Yeah, he fought a superhero, and he had the aqua suit, but he didn't have any superpowers on himself. He got into a fight with a superhero, but he was stranded, left on a desert island for, presumably, a decade. And from there, he was trying to get off, and in this issue, he finally gets off the island.
Because he recovered some of his tech from the water, like, you know, enough of it. But then the rest of it, he was like experimenting with like different kinds of plants on the island and different kinds of fish oils and things to try to make it. So, but his whole thing was he wanted to get off the island and show people, you know, who's the boss. Cause his big thing was like, he was a thief. He was a criminal. But he wanted he wanted people to talk about him. He wanted the acclaim of being a big time villain. So he put together this version of his suit made from like, you know, whatever science stuff he could fix up, whatever he could recover, and then stuff from the island, like leaves and shit made into wings. And he went to like rob this boat, but there were a new version of seagoing villains on the boat. So he had to fight them so he could steal the stuff. Well, he's fighting them and kind of talking about how terrible they are. Like the big one is like a pirate villain. But he's like, God, he has an accent. He sounds like he's from Kentucky. He's got this totally wrong. They kind of shot him down though. He did stop them, and then Mermaid, the hero who he had fought, back in the day when he got stranded on the island, realized it was him, and she was older and stuff. But at that point, like, his suit was kind of fucked, and he decided he like had problems, like, all the noise from the fighting and stuff bugged the shit out of him. And when he tried to respond to her, he couldn't talk. And he said, oh, I haven't talked in 30 years. And he'd been on a deserted island, so he hadn't really heard a lot of noise in 30 years either. So he couldn't deal with all the activity because he wasn't used to it anymore. So he flew off and he went back to the island, and he said he was going to make the suit better. Like, he'd learned from this experience and he was going to rebuild it now. But, you know, the indication is the guy can't hack it in the real world anymore.
And the fact of the matter is, he's on this desert island. There's tons of people who, you know, would love to be stranded on a desert island for the rest of their life. Obviously, it's not one of these things where he has enough to where he can live off of. He was obviously, before this, he was on the island for 10 years trying to rebuild his suit.
30 years.
Oh, 30 years? I'm sorry. It was 30 years. And the reason why I said 10, because the superhero is quick to mention, you know, you saved the ship from those pirates and, you know, blah, 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 statute of limitations. She thought he was trying to go legit.
Yeah, and he wasn't. He wanted to steal, but he was disgusted by these newfangled villains, which was, you know, it was a cute story. And I mean, you think it'd be sad. Like, he was on this island for 30 years. He finally got off, and then he went back to the island. But it wasn't presented that way. Like, it was presented as a good thing for him, kind of, because he was happy on the island. He's happy on the island being by himself and just fucking around with his stuff and trying to make it better. That's what he enjoys doing. Like, he wouldn't have a better life going out, getting arrested, and being thrown in prison.
Exactly.
Which is what would have happened. So, no, he had somewhat of a happy ending.
Yeah, so, you know, having to live out your remaining days in a desert island paradise, yeah, that's pretty good.
There are worse things.
All right, that's going to do it for the DC portion of the show. Let's move on to Marvel with Inhumans vs. X-Men, Issue 6, writer Charles Soule, art by Lin-Leo Francis Yu.
Well, this was the end. Emma heel turn.
They didn't even have the gall to try to pull the trigger on Emma Death. She turned heel, she ran away at the end, but that's all that happened.
At least she turned heel, and they teased a Havoc heel turn, but he made it incredibly clear in a really awkward way that he was not turning heel. He just thought he owed her because Cyclops was banging her, and that's his brother, and his brother's dead now. So when the Inhumans were ready to get her, Havoc kind of fought him off and got her away, and now she's apparently leading the Hellfire Club again. Okay, you know what they missed out on this?
No.
What would have been awesome? They would have had to have killed her. When Morrison wrote New X-Men, and he gave her the new diamond powers, because he's the one who did the secondary mutation thing, he had, I think it was Cassandra Nova talking shit to her, and she kind of fucked with her, and she's like, you know, every diamond has a flaw. And it was almost like a little storyline, like she was worried that she could be, you know, she could still be hurt in the diamond form.
But the thing was, you know, it's really hard to find those weaknesses.
Unless you're Karnak.
And in this
issue, they're fighting, and the mutants, there's more mutants, but then more Inhumans come in to fight, and Karnak basically teleports on top of her with Lockjaw, and he said something like, you're flawed. What I really wanted was, if they were gonna kill her, Karnak just fucking taps her and she shatters. That would have been awesome. but it didn't happen because they want her to be a villain, and that's fine because, you know, they've, you know, Apocalypse is massively overused, and after that horrible movie, I don't think anybody really wants to use them anymore.
Exactly, and the idea that you're going to have Emma Frost as a villain down the road, and the idea that she's going to have the Hellfire Academy again, that's kind of a cool, interesting thing, especially if you're going to have an X-Men book where it focuses on the younger kids. It would be cool if you had Emma Frost as the leader of the of a new group of evil mutants to fight the younger X-Men again.
Yeah, well, because Magneto's half a heel and half a good guy.
Yeah, that's another thing that happened in this issue where
she mind controlled him.
Yeah, up until this point, you thought Magneto was 100% on board with all this, but it was revealed in this issue he was being mind controlled by Emma.
Yeah, so she was fucking doing the mind control on everyone. But the other thing is the Inhumans decided, like, they never told the Inhumans about the whole, oh, the Terrigen Cloud is going to disperse into the atmosphere and kill all the mutants. They never told the Inhumans about that.
At least they tried
to.
They
tried
to.
They never did.
They tried to explain why they never told them because they felt like there wasn't enough time, and B that the Inhumans wouldn't have been on board. And I mentioned this eventually. You know, it's going to be one of those things where, yeah, the Inhumans are going to be kind of bummed that there's not going to be no Inhumans. But at the end of the day, they don't want people dying as a result. And remember when this thing started, I said I think the Inhumans are going to be fine because, you know, yeah, people aren't going to turn into Inhumans, but the opposite is having mutants die. It's like,
well, yeah. Well, what happened was they basically, so Moon Girl and Forge went to Enelix and they worked together to make something that would destroy all the Terrigen in the atmosphere. And Medusa pretty much agreed and said, yeah, we should do this because we can't, you know, we can't kill mutants to keep Terrigenesis. So they shut it off, and that means the fight's over. Like, Emma's still out there, but the fight between the mutants and the Inhumans is over.
Well, it's funny you bring that up. As soon as they did that, Emma went full heel, and it's then that they revealed that Emma had taken over Forge, and she made these gigantic sentinels to fight the Inhumans.
Yeah, which is horrible for a mutant to do. She had Forge make Inhuman hunting sentinels, which you don't do that when you're a mutant. Like, that's horrible to do.
Well,
what the sentinels mean.
I will say this: if anybody's gonna do that, it's gonna be Emma.
Yeah, well, and at least she's full heel. Like, they went all the way with something. And
unlike they did with
Cyclops. I mean, this explains why, you know, the new Inhumans book is they're gonna be in space. They're obviously going to be looking for a way to find Terrigen crystals again.
But wasn't it in the Uncanny Inhuman series that they've established that Maximus has a formula to make more Terrigen?
Maximus is a liar.
That's true.
So I don't know if you can believe anything he says. But I mean, I think that's what their new book is going to be about. It's going to be them looking for, you know, Terrigen, basically. Maybe they'll go find the Kree and ask them.
I'm sure that.
Although the Kree didn't give them Terrigenesis.
No, but as we've seen, I think in the Hickman run of Fantastic Four, there are in fact Inhumans on other planets. So that could be their thing going forward. Is they want to talk to the other Inhumans on other planets? Maybe they have Terrigen crystals.
Yeah. The important thing is the whole deal with the fight happened because, you know, when Thanos attacked, Black Bolt blew up a Talon and it shattered the Terrigen crystals and the clouds came. That was the problem. Before that, when they just had the Terrigen crystals and that's how they did Terrigenesis, there was no problem. So if they can get a safe way to do it, everything will be fine. The Inhumans can continue on. But right now we're stuck at a set number of Inhumans. And really, this probably would have been the plan all along, because with all those new humans, there were so many new Inhumans that it would have gotten hard to keep track of. Like, I can still name most of them, I think, if I really think about it. But, you know, for normal people who don't read all these fucking books, they'd be seeing these characters like, who the fuck is this guy? Like, there's a new Inhuman every fucking week. It's worse than the mutants used to be. So, you know, it makes sense if they just put a stopper on it for a while. It was a finish to it. I mean, this was better than, Death of X, although it was basically just a continuation of it. This was better than Civil War 2.
Well, that's a low bar.
Yeah, I mean, I'm listing things that were shit, but I don't think it was terrible by any means, and there's gonna be it's not Omega Issues. They're doing an X-Men Prime and an Inhumans Prime to show, like, and also Uncanny Inhumans 20 is the epilogue, but they are doing books that show where we're at now. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I was in Humans vs. X-Men. A fairly decent outing, if you ask me. I wouldn't say it necessarily blew me away, but at the same time, considering I can't remember the last time we had a good crossover, this was fairly decent.
I'm grading on a curve.
Yeah, you're grading on the curve of, like, Civil War 2, and I can't remember anything that came before that, before,
Pleasant Hill.
Yeah.
Pleasant Hill had a really good idea and a shit resolution.
Yeah. I think part of that was they had only so many issues to cover the story, where they had the Alpha and the Omega, and the meat of the story was in all the crossovers, and that's kind of hard to do.
Oh, well.
All right, since we're talking mutants, let's talk Old Man Logan, issue 19, writer Jeff Lemire, art by Andre Sorrentino. This book's... I still like this series.
I like what they're setting up, because it means I get the good artist back.
But my thing with this issue was... The last issue, they explained the premise going forward. It's supposed to be Logan wants to go back to the
but he doesn't want to stay there.
But, and his reasoning for doing it is even dumber, because it's like, it started off as, yeah, that was a bit of an oversight by Logan, because it's like he was raising the Hulk kid, but he just
strikes. It makes sense given his character. Wolverine's all about honor and shit.
But here's the thing. As the reader of this book and someone who read the Secret War tie-in book, the Old Man Logan, you just assume he abandoned the child, but in this they explain, no, he set the kid up pretty good, so I'm wondering why he has to go back now?
Well, because he got a vision from Jean Grey when she was controlled by the Brood. Jean Grey can't time travel, so I don't know why this means anything, but she got a vision of the kid being like the new evil despot in the wasteland, which means something happened he gave me like Iron Fist's daughter. Something happened to her, and the kid got away from her and then was raised badly. So he feels responsible for that. So basically, he goes around to every single person who does technology or magic in the Marvel Universe. Magic is the first one, because, you know, she's an X-Men, and she, like, tells him, oh, no, time travel, it's bad news. And... he goes to Beast, he goes to Black Panther, he went to a bunch of fucking people.
I think Brother
Voodoo.
And
they all said no. The last one was Doctor Strange, who told him no, and Magic told me you'd be coming, and we've had a lot of problems with this time travel stuff, which, you know what, fuck you, Beast. Nothing came out of you bringing those ex-kids back, but whatever. And also, I want to remind you, a big point in that story was, because they had brought those kids to the future, bad shit was going to happen. And then the very next storyline, they did time travel. And two storylines later, they did time travel. The X-Men are constantly fucking around with time.
Remember thought after the Bendis series, they would put a clamp to all the time travel and not...
And they didn't.
Have a moratorium on time travel for like a year or two.
Extraordinary X-Men just finished like three time travel stories. They had the one where they were fucking around with Apocalypse in the future. And then in All New, they had Beast and Evan going back in time to see young Apocalypse. Like, they're constantly traveling through time. And by the way, it always involves Apocalypse, who is not over anymore. You killed him.
I would argue if he was ever over, but that's just me.
He was. Age of Apocalypse was fucking huge.
To me, that was more about the alternate reality than it was about Apocalypse.
Well, still, Apocalypse was the focal point of it.
But going back to the premise of this series, I get the feeling it's going to wind up being Maestro, who's the evil Hulk, and it's not going to be the kid Hulk.
I kind of like the idea of, since we don't have Jubilee and Shogo anymore, mm-hmm. I kind of like the idea of old man Logan with a little Hulk kid. I think it's cute. I don't know if we'll get it, but I sort of like it.
Yeah, and the end of this book had, I forget who he finally confronted, but as he was on his way to confront his last person, because he'd run out of superheroes. So
Asmodeus, who is a old character who is involved in time travel.
Yeah, so obviously he wants to make his way to this, I presume, supervillain, and on the way he's encountered by Miles Morales. And Miles is sort of trying to talk him out of it. He's trying to stop him.
Yeah, because he was breaking into a fucking prison.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're not supposed to do that.
So, that was pretty much it. I forget why. I think it's issue 21 that we get the new writer. So, Lemire is obviously helping the new writer set up his storyline. So, this is good.
What issue was this?
This was 19.
No, he could finish a story in 3 issues.
No, I think the new writer comes out in 21, though.
Oh, okay. So I don't think he can finish it in one issue.
No. In fact, we mentioned the big first thing that they're going to do with old man Logan with this new writer. He's going to fight Maestro. So I don't know if that vision was a false vision and it was Maestro, or it's legit and Maestro's influenced this new young Hulk kid.
I don't know. We'll find out.
Yes.
Unless we stop reading it, but I want to at least see where the story goes.
Yes. Nova issue 4, writer Jeff Loveness, art by Ramon K. Perez.
I still like this, but the fucking artist needs to learn how to draw kids, because Nova is supposed to be like 15, 16.
He looked
about 9.
Yeah.
Like, he looked way too young, and so did the girl, and they weren't drawn like this in previous issues, and it bugged the shit out of me. Whereas Ryder and Gamora looked like adults.
Yeah, so it's funny you bring up Sam and Ryder and their interaction with this woman. This was very much a sort of dating issue where you had Sam going on his date with his high school, classmate.
The girl he likes.
Yeah, and then you had the issue with Ryder, and he's catching up with Gamora, and they're sort of picking up where they left off with all their romantic affairs, so.
And he won't tell her what happened to him. She's like, yeah, Star-Lord came back, and you didn't, and now you're back, and you didn't call me? And he's like, yeah, sorry about that, I got some shit going on.
my favorite parts as Sam is getting ready for his date, he's starting to second guess himself. And part of it is he has these visions that everyone secretly hates him, including Cap. And there's this one scene where he's imagining what Cap would say to him. He's like, you suck. Everyone thinks so. Especially me. We talk about it all the time.
All the time.
You suck so hard.
It was pretty funny.
But like, Cap was all like exhausted and derpy. Yeah,
well, he was imagining him. It was all right.
But that was pretty much the gist of this issue where, before he goes on the date, Sam, sister says, oh, can I play with the helmet again? And he's quick to point out, he's like, no, last time you did that, you blew a hole through the wall and we got kicked out of the apartment. So you can't be, using the helmet. And the mother, he has to get back up from the mom because the sister still wants to play with the helmet. And the mom says, no, you can't play with the helmet. But it's then that the mom says she's leaving the grandma in charge. And the grandma can't do anything to stop her.
The girl he's dating, she told him, oh, like, pick me up at 7. He's like, all right, cool. And then he's like, oh, shit, pick you up. And even though he flies in outer space all the time, which is his defense, he does not have a license, so she won't let him drive, which is pretty fucking funny. So they have a – what happens is he tries to, like – like, first of all, they point out, and this was funny, I didn't even think of this, like, who the hell, why'd she drop us off at the mall? Like, who goes to the mall anymore? And I didn't consider that, like, when I was a kid, that was an acceptable date.
Yeah, because where else are you going to go? You don't have a car, you don't have money.
Yeah, you go to the mall, or, like, me and my friends, one of the parents would always drop us off at the mall, and, you know, you go to the arcade, and you fuck around in the food court, and annoy the shopkeepers because you're not going to buy anything because you're a kid. But kids don't do that anymore.
Well, so, kids don't go to the mall anymore.
Nobody goes to the mall anymore as we're
I don't think anybody goes to the mall. I've been to the mall like twice in the last couple of years.
Yeah, in fact there was a legit news story I saw on CNN that the retail bubble has burst with the rise of Amazon. Like, nobody goes to malls anymore.
Well, it's kind of pointless. Like, why am I going to go to a mall and pay more for something when I can just wait 2 days and get it cheaper?
And I don't have
better variety.
Yeah, I don't have to be stuck with whatever they have at the store. I can get exactly what I want no matter how obscure it is.
No, it makes sense. I'm not bemoaning the death of malls. I'm just saying, like, yeah, that made a lot of sense. So he's like trying to, there's like a sort of nice restaurant in the mall and they try to go there, but there's like a 2 hour wait. And then he's like, well, maybe we can go to the movies, but I don't know a movie's out. And she's like, hey, bro, can you stop being like weird? Like, she basically told him, you're trying too hard. Like, we don't have to go out to eat and all this. Like, she suggests, why don't we just go for a walk and make fun of people?
Which he's down for, and that's what they do, and they have a good day. And at the end, the mom comes and picks them up. But it's then that's something happens, and Rich Rider freaks out. And it,
well, because his cancerous shit is starting again.
Yeah, and it's then that they cut to the Sam part yet again. And they show that the apartment's all screwed up and the grandma's freaking out. And presumably you'd assume that
one of the many Nova helmets is missing.
Yeah,
the
exactly.
Little girl has gotten a hold of it, which is bad because you don't want a little girl running around with a Nova Force and she doesn't know what to do.
Yeah, and she's already demonstrated before she doesn't exactly know what she's doing with the helmet.
And the grandma was tripping balls. Oh, mijo.
Or she's like, El Diablo.
Yeah. I guess she doesn't know he's Nova.
No, she doesn't.
So this is the kid has apparently turned into a demon and fled.
But yeah, that was this week's Nova. Yeah. I really liked it. So I have no
again. Pick. I like the dual setup because the characters are so different. Not only because one's a child and one's an adult, but they're
parallels.
Just very yeah. They're both good guys, but they're very different, and they deal with very different things. Like, Ryder is dealing with, he's infected by the cancerverse, and he might be a monster. And young Nova's problem, Sam, is he has to go on a date with a girl. I just think it's kind of cute how they do that.
Oh, there's that one issue where Sam had beat up all the supervillains and Thanos is like, oh, he's so cool. He's so sexy.
he's it's good. It's a good mix of comedy and seriousness.
And this is like many other books that we've, the only one I can think of like that maybe is a parallel to it. Like, we've tried on many occasions to read and you know, like Captain Marvel. We're currently reading the current series, and we're liking it so far, although I'm a little skeptical of it. This seems like it's a lot easier where we try to read Nova in the past, and we read a couple of issues, but we quickly drop it. This seems like a Nova run that's probably going to stick around for a while.
Yeah, I've never liked Nova more than I like it right now. So, good.
Alright, and to wrap up this week's books, we have Silver Surfer Issue 9, writer Dan Slott, art by Mike Allred.
They entered a solar system that had four planets. And the first planet they went to was completely destroyed because of something or other. It had been completely destroyed, though, which is bad. The second planet had been destroyed by pollution. The third planet had been destroyed by something else. So finally they went to the fourth planet and this one was all right. Like, it's all futuristic and nice and stuff.
You know what it reminded me of, right?
No.
Oh, wait.
What? Are you going to tell me?
It's Boy Elroy.
It did in fact look like the Jetsons.
I even had fun on Twitter. I was like, I contacted Slott and Allred. I'm like, oh, if you're gonna do Jetsons, you missed out on an opportunity to do this with Silver Surfer.
James, stop this crazy thing!
I was like, this week Silver Surfer desperately needed a scene where NORAD was stuck on an out of control treadmill. Don, stop this crazy thing.
That would have been good. They should have done that, but they didn't.
It's a shameful
unfortunately.
Thing.
It was lobster head. Yeah, so they're on this planet, and everything's looking pretty good. Our first sign something weird's going on is when Dawn says she needs to go to the bathroom, and they're like, ew, she's going to expel waste from her body? Mm-hmm. And Silver Surfer's like, oh, God, people, humans, they're good, but like they never stop. I got to tell you about flatulence. It's awful. All these things these humans do. And they're like, well, what about you? And he's like, no, I can transfer matter. So it's all right. So Dawn leaves, comes back, and they keep talking about the facilities. That's the thing, because they say, we'll take her to the facilities. And, you know, facilities is another word for the bathroom, so you don't think anything of it. They come to find out that all the people in this planet are, they are the people, but their bodies have been destroyed, and they are now composed of hard light, like the Green Lantern rings. They're basically holograms, living holograms.
Mm-hmm.
And Dawn finds out that they turned her into a hologram. So, like, her and Surfer were, like, going around the town. They were going to the zoo. They went to a dance, and they were having a great time. And then she finds out, okay, I've been turned into hard light. What the fuck happened to my body? And they're like, oh, we sent it to processing. They're going to destroy it.
Like, you don't need your body now. You're basically immortal, and you're going to live this life where you produce no waste, and we've gone through three planets now. We've seen what this does when you have, like, you know, someone, they have to, they're dependent on the natural resources, and they expel, you know, bodily fluids. It's like we've learned that, you know, if we have to have a sustainable future, that we have to be just beings of light, and we've long since ditched our physical body, so we figured we'd do you a favor, and you could live with us forever, and you wouldn't need your physical body anymore. So we sent it to processing, which was, a speaking of treadmill, they sent it to a conveyor belt to be fed into a buzzsaw.
Which is, they're then used as, like, manure.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of the people are hard light creations, but there is a group of normal people who live on a farm. And they, basically their job is, they farm to stay alive. They live down here. And their job is to keep the machines running that power the holograms. That's all they do. So Dawn, Toomey, and Surfer fly down. They save Dawn's body. Surfer uses his powers to bring her back to life. But the problem is, there is now Dawn and the light construct Dawn. Who?
She's full of sentient, yes.
Yeah, because she thinks... Well, she is. She's real.
Mm-hmm.
She's as real as them, but Dawn is also real. However, hard light Dawn cannot leave the planet. So she decides to stay on the planet and live here because it wasn't a bad place. And real Dawn will go off with Surfer and continue their adventures.
Mm-hmm.
It was a cute story.
Yeah.
It was almost like an Astro City story.
Yeah, and I think on Twitter, Dan Slott was apologizing for the delay.
He's like, yeah, it has been a while.
Yeah, I think we talked about it. It's like, yeah, Silver Surfer, we'd like to read it if it ever comes out ever again.
It's good. It came out.
Yeah, it was good. I wouldn't say it was well worth the wait. It wasn't that good, but it was
but it was good.
It was a issue of Silver Surfer.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's books. Let's move on to our final segment now. Next week's books. That song be more Japanese?
Yes.
How so?
It could have, like, the chimes and
But if
it sound like the Orient Express music.
But basically, if you look up J-pop in the dictionary, it should just be this song.
I actually picked this one because you guys know the gimmick is wrestling music for next week's books. And then it so slowly became bad wrestling music. And Tony will constantly fucking bring this Yoshitatsu's WWE music up. Like whenever a Japanese guy or an Asian of any type signs WWE, he's like, oh, what's this music going to be?
Because, you know, WWE, they're not 100% sympathetic of the Japanese people.
Nakamura's music is awesome, though.
I will say that, but I'm under the impression that Vince McMahon had very little to do with it.
Oh, he didn't, but
I'm shocked they didn't give either Yoshitatsu or Nakamura the Ultimate Dragon music.
Or I don't know the Ultimate
Dragon. Oh, the Ricky the Dragon.
The Ultimate Dragon music is, yeah, it's the Ricky Steamboat music. Why did they do that? Because Ricky Steamboat wasn't supposed to be Japanese, was he?
Well, as we've seen before in the past with pro wrestling, they play fast and loose. If you're somewhat Asian, we've obviously Yokozuna being the one that comes all the time.
No. That was Yokozuna was a Samoan who they pretended was a big fat Japanese guy.
Yeah, that's what
but
I'm saying.
I mean, Ricky Steamboat was not presented as a Asian, was
Ricky
he?
Ricky the or Dragon like a Steamboat?
I know that's what he's called, but like he spoke perfect English.
He came to the ring in a karate gi.
Well, yeah, but where did they say he was from?
I don't know where, I will admit to that, I don't know where he was built, but obviously, being of Hawaiian descent, it's not super, the leap to make him Asian isn't that far either.
Well, I mean, I guess technically they are Asian. Dude, wait.
What?
He was billed from Honolulu, Hawaii, and Charlotte, North Carolina.
Yeah, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat.
Do you know his real last name?
Youngblood, right?
No, just Blood.
Oh, that's even weirder.
That is the most... Why did he pick a fake name?
What, Ricky Blood?
Yeah, that's an awesome name.
Okay, if you're going to pick a name...
Like, he'd have to be a heel.
But no. Here's the thing. Okay, you're going to pick a kayfabe name, right? How did you come across Steamboat?
There was another wrestler named Steamboat, and he was his kayfabe nephew or something.
Oh, for those of you who know nothing about pro wrestling, they do that all the time. If they want to get somebody over, they'll just say they have some kind of relations. Obviously, we've seen before as part of pro wrestling fans the loose lineage that is the Anderson family,
or you know, all the Samoans except Samoa Joe are related.
Well. That's funny because that's almost kind of true because a lot of them are related in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, like half cousins and shit.
Yeah, so it's one of those instances where fiction is not that much different than reality. All right, speaking of bogus realities, let's talk next week's books.
Archie 18.
Okay.
Zombie tramps. I see that.
I read. I know you didn't like Zombie Tramp. I read a couple issues of Zombie Tramp. It's fine. It's not something I need to read on a regular basis.
Okay. We are going to read this Neil Gaiman's American Gods Shadows number one. This is American Gods is a very good book. Neil Gaiman is writing this comic, and it's coming out because the TV show is coming out.
Ah, okay.
But I will read anything Neil Gaiman writes, and I like the novel, so I will read this. It's from Dark Horse, oddly. Okay. Aquaman 19.
Moving on to DC now? Okay, can I make a pitch? Can I make an argument for Batwoman if it's written by your girl Marguerite Bennett of Monstrous fame?
She's not really my girl.
I've seen you put over... on your Facebook, Marguerite or Monstrous. So
I like Monstrous, but
I'm not gonna live and die with this. If you don't want to read it, that's fine.
put it in the maybes.
All right.
Did I say Batman 19?
No, you did not, but I'm adding that to the list. It's on the list!
He just made the list! Justice League 17?
Batman, you stupid idiot!
Lucifer 16? Super Sons 2? Superman 19? The penultimate chapter?
Ooh!
I don't want to read Trinity.
Is it written by someone new or is it the same creative and you just don't want to read it?
Francis Metapol.
Let's see what this issue is about before I casually brush it off. Let's look at this. I've never been super fan of the
it
Trinity
doesn't
book.
Sound awful, but...
Divided We Fall Prelude, America's Divided... I'll put this in the maybe pile, but I'd rather read Batwoman before I read Trinity again.
Wildstorm number 2.
Looking.
I don't wanna miss anything, so. No, I don't wanna read any of those books. Okay, Image, Seer 8 million. Eclipse number 5.
What's
God what? Country number 3.
Ooh, yeah.
Injection number 11.
Wow, talking about a blast from the past.
It's coming back. Hyped. Killer Be Killed number 7.
Okay, remember how I said I wasn't willing to go to the mat for Batwoman? I know you haven't been super on board with Killer Be Killed. That was the one I was going to go to the mat for.
Yeah, I'm kind of bored with it, but you like it, so. Whatever, put it on the list. Amazing Spider-Man 25. I hate Marvel's ridiculous reprints and variants. And
oh, but yeah, they screw up us before. Obviously, I did the solo review of last week's Superman because obviously you often get reprints from DC and Marvel, and that kind of screws up what you think's new and
yeah.
What's not.
Great Lakes Avengers number 6. Mighty Thor 17. Miss Marvel 16. Punisher 10. Star-Lord 4.
Are we going to read that considering we didn't read the last issue?
Oh, okay. Never mind on Star-Lord. I don't need to read Totally Awesome Hulk anymore.
Let me look at the cover.
It's a cute book, but like we're reading Hulk, which is a better book,
a much better book. Let's see what's on the cover. We stopped reading it because they did all the stuff with Jeremy Lin, which you know Jeremy Lin in 2017. Like, come on.
Well, you don't watch basketball.
No, so. I've even asked Dave, who watches basketball. I'm like, so Dave, is Jeremy Lin still a thing? And he's like, no, not really.
Well, there was a point. It's because he's Asian, and he's Asian. Uncanny Avengers, or U.S. Avengers 4.
Ooh.
Uncanny Avengers 21. That's everything. Nothing from Valiant.
Okay, let's see how many issues that comes up to. I don't think we're going to have a week as light as we did. That's 20 books.
Is that with the optional ones?
No, that's without the optional ones.
Okay, good.
Here's the thing. We'll do what I did with Swamp Thing.
You will read them.
And if I think they're worth reading, I'll ask you to read it. And I'll put it on the
list. I'm okay with that.
Okay. So 20 books. That's not too bad.
Yeah.
All right. I think that's going to do it for this week's show then. All right. So from all of us at halfcard.com, thanks for checking out this week's show. And as always, check you guys out next week. Adios.
Folks, here's Jumpin' Jeff Farmer. Jeff, a while back, what a match you had with Motley.
Yep. Probably the hardest match I ever had in my life. But I don't like it when things aren't going my way. Motley Crue, you turn the tables on me. You turned the tables in a wrong way. You got me mad now. I stood around. I listened to everything you had to say. I did everything necessary. But when you turn around and you backstab me one way or another, and you cheat me out of what's rightfully mine, that's when I get angry. Now I'm the one doing the challenging. I'm issuing a challenge to you, Motley Crue. Get in the ring with me. This time, I'm going full force.
Jumping Jeff Farmer, let's go to the ring.
You said I had too much emotion on that.
Yeah, because I'm trying to sync up your promo with the real video. And even you trying to do a bad version of that promo, you do a better job than Jumping Jeff Farmer.
Damn it.
So you trying to do a bad promo is still better than Jumpin' Jeff Farmer trying to do a good
some
promo.
Some people would say that means Jumpin' Jeff is a really bad promo. I think it says I am a fucking awesome promo and I need to get into wrestling. I'm 33. I'm still young enough.